I'm very smart about it. I'm not doing it for the money. I do it because I want to bring together a good event. And I think the best thing that I sell is I sell FOMO. Like you need to sell FOMO. You need to give people the feeling that if they don't go, then they're missing out on that night. And I think I do a good job of building that FOMO where it's like, this is the event to go to, especially like when it's in Miami. In New York, I do a good job of it too. Like when I played at the last time I played in New York, it was a really good venue. It was called Ketchy Shubie. I got a text the next day and they're like, that was our best night of revenue we've ever had, which is good. And I have a good New York following. Like I can bring out a lot of people there as well. But it's like that's the most rewarding thing is like when it's not just in Miami, when I'm like, oh, I can do this in another city. That's when I'm like, okay, this is really possible.
You know the drill. Ben, welcome back. Thanks for coming back on.
Thanks.
Welcome to
another episode
of the Nicola Podcast.
First repeat.
Yeah, I know. Big honor. We were saying that we've had a few guests, like our buddy Tyler Seller. He runs like Masswell Media. He does a lot with different artists, like performers, does photo shoots for them, and that's kind of simplifying what he does. But yeah, he's been killing it, and he's been like a guest on a couple other episodes as well. But dude, like, how do your sunglasses stay on the top of your head like that? Like,
is that hard for you to do? Because I get that a lot, actually.
I gotta always kind of just like put them on top of my ears and then like on top of my head.
On top of your hair?
And like where my hair kind of is like flowy and it kind of comes down. I kind of like use it as a headband to like keep my hair back.
I always just put them like right here. It's like most comfortable. It's funny because I always get that and then I'll put it on someone else's head and then
it just slips.
And then they'll be like, it'll fall down. And I'm like, I don't know. I have a small head too. I have like a 7 1/8 head. So
when you're DJing too, you have like the headphones on the top of your head and those don't ever fall either.
I always keep, in the front because some DJs do that and then some of them put them backwards. But for me, like when I put them backwards, the earphones like come up here. And so like, I can't like just bend it down and get it on my ear or like come like right here. So like if I put it the other way, like I can just easily just go like this. Like I'm not like doing it for like a style thing. Like I'm just doing it for like comfortability.
But it also looks pretty cool.
It does kind of
happens
cool,
to look pretty cool.
But like it, yeah, because I don't want to wear them the whole time. And I hate wearing around my neck because it kind of like chokes you and feels annoying. So it's just so easy to keep them up here and just pull one ear down.
See, I thought it was just like a purely look thing.
No, it's just like super convenient to be like, boom. And then I can just like flip it up and off and it's like, it just stays.
So like the bulletproof vest you wore to like that show, that was also for functionality?
That was not for functionality. No functionality. And it's not bulletproof.
So since last
store
time.
Store some good stuff in there.
Oh, good stuff,
USBs, whatever you want to, whatever you think.
Since last time we talked, like 6 months ago, what you been up to?
Last time, was it January? Oh, it was December. Wow, it is 6 months. That's insane because that felt like a month ago. But
by the way,
a lot has happened
after that show that night. We went to Fable, and we had an awesome time. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for coming.
We went on the boat a couple days later. Another great time. That was honestly, the boat was a vibe.
The boat was sick.
We had ourselves a weekend. And then what else? Did we meet up again?
I was down there in Miami like a month after.
And then you came again to Fable, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Fable that time as well.
You were with your girlfriend.
I was.
Yeah.
That was a good time.
When was that? Was January 13th? That was January 13th.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, because it was Martin Luther King weekend.
Exactly. Then, yeah. But that was another good show.
That was fun.
I've always had a good time at Fable. And it's cool to see, like, so many more people going there. I feel like I'm, like, seeing, like, and more stories of it. Like, I don't know if it's just because, you know, like, now I know what it is. And, like, I just kind of have an eye for it.
Yeah.
But I feel like everybody's always there now.
It's been, like, a crazy... I think, like, since December to now... That was like right when it first kind of started, and the one you guys went to was that New Year's or not?
I think it was no. So I think it was the second weekend that like the weekend before what you were talking about. You were like that was insane.
Yes. Okay. So you guys went to it was an Art Basel show. Yes. So it was like smaller and more intimate. Because they didn't want it to be like this big thing. They wanted it to be like high-end.
The owner was there. Yeah, it was an anniversary party.
It was like more intimate, like high-end, like different, like not really my crowd. I think I was only allowed to like do a 200 person, 200 big tickets. But normally we do like 600-700. It was the week before when I did it, and it was crazy. Yeah, so that was like the first time I did like something really big. And then like since then, I've been doing a bunch of other stuff, different venues. 2 weeks ago was, I want to say it was my favorite show I did. We did a different Fable one about a month ago. And that, it was just like, I don't know, it was like this really nice night. It was April 19th. It was this really nice night there. And I think everyone was just like so excited to drink. Like, and Fridays hit different there. It's like everyone's so ready to go out and drink. Saturdays, for some reason, my turnouts aren't as good because I think everyone goes on boats during the day, and everyone gets kind of tired. Or I think Saturdays people make like bigger dinner plans and stuff like that. But like Friday, it's just like everyone's like done with work and just like happy hour, and we have great happy hours in Miami, and like then everyone's just like ready to go, and so it's good. But this event, I don't know, it's just like building like momentum is like so good down there, and it's like every week it just gets bigger, and we just meet more people, and like our friend group just gets like so much stronger. And that day I remember being like, holy shit, like as soon as I got on, everyone was just like so there. And I remember like my crowd control was like, I had everyone like so like with me, and I've never had that before. And then 2 weeks ago we did this place, Mode, which is like a very like cool like music based venue. Like the sound is insane, as the best. It's all like L-acoustic sound, which is like the best sound you can get, like a lot of people would say. And the lighting in there is really good. It fits about 300. It fits like 280. We probably put like 350 in there, packed it two floors. I basically went in there and I gave them like bar guarantee of like one of their top like better nights that they would have. And I gave them like a deposit and said, I want the bottom and the top floor, and I'm going to book all the DJs and I'm going to pack this place out. And that place was packed by the time I went on, and then it was one in, one out for the whole night, and we crushed revenue. It was probably one of their best nights they've ever had. It was just like good because it was a real music venue, and it was nice to like finally have that, because a lot of the venues I try to do are like very beautiful like rooftops and stuff like that. It's not going to be like the best sound, but I try to make the atmosphere really nice for people that aren't necessarily like huge like house music fans. They still want to go and be involved, but this was like a darker, more, it's in a basement.
So was that the one that was like a pretty big stage with like the LED behind you?
No, that was this place called M2. That was that's an Ultra Resistance. They have a residency there. Ultra has a residency there, the Resistance stage. So it's all like melodic and techno DJs that play there, which is, it's the best production I've ever seen in Miami. They have the best lasers, the best sound system. The room is like, it's like not too big. If it's like 2,500 people, I think. The pit is sick. And then there's a second floor where all the tables are. And it's just like every spot in that room is like a sick view of the stage. And the visuals there are awesome. And the people there are amazing. That was the first time I ever got like royalty treatment. Like I walked in and they were like, just like they had like a girl literally working just to be like my assistant, and like anything I needed, I could just look over and be like, water, like tequila, and she would just be there in a minute and just like have everything done. And like that was the first time I got like really nice treatment, which was pretty cool.
How did it feel kind of being treated like a celebrity?
It's more so nice when a venue like that like, respects everyone, and they kind of honor you like you could be the next big thing, and they respect you in that way. There's some venues where you show up and if you're the opener, they don't give a fuck about you. They kind of just like are like, oh, whatever, like they're not going to give you anything. They just don't really give you the time of day, and you kind of just show up and you don't really know like what you're supposed to do, like where you're supposed to go. But this, they were so organized, and they're like, okay, like, this is like all your stuff. This is all like, the food that you wanted. This is the tequila you wanted. This is like your own private bathroom. This is your green room. So that it's nice that they do it. And I think that's good on them because they probably, I mean, it's ultra. So like they're going to have openers that go in there that are going to be the next like big thing. So it's good that they treat people like that because those people are going to want to come back and be a part of what's like the bigger stages.
I feel like they're intentional with their bookings. Like they're not, they're trying to buy low, you know, on people.
It's yeah, it's smart. You get people in low and then you get, you're going to get a better price on those people for the rest of their career because they helped you and you're always going to want to go back to them.
So also regardless, like that's just hospitality. That's how you treat people. You know?
Yeah. Everyone. Yeah.
You've been like doing like bigger and bigger shows since we last talked. How does that feel when you're preparing for a show? Do you get more nervous or do you feel more confident?
I never get nervous. I get anxious because I just like want to get there and play. I get mostly anxious about the fact that every single time I do a show, I have like a really big pregame at my place and my friends will come over like too early before I can have like all my music done. And like while they're over like hanging out and like partying, I'm like sitting there on my computer like trying to download or just add like some last minute songs that I get sent to me or some new like unreleased IDs that I'm like, oh, I gotta add this to my set. And I get super stressed and I'm just like, oh, like I don't have enough time. And I procrastinate a lot. So like everything I do, I work better under pressure. So it's like, I always wait till the last minute for stuff and I rush everything. But a lot of times I go into these knowing nothing that I'm going to play. Like that M2 show I did was like the biggest show. It was just like the biggest level show I did because I was opening for Matheim and they're really big. And then obviously Resistance stage is like a really big deal. And that whole stage is just like a really like, it's like an honor to play for them. And that I went into it thinking I was going to do one thing and I completely changed up and I was playing music that I didn't even know. I knew the songs were good because I downloaded them, but like looking at the names of the songs, I had no idea what they were, but I knew if they were in a certain folder that I downloaded them, they were going to be good. But I just like was kind of taking a chance. I was like, I was just playing it. And I was like, I hope this one works. And then crazy. I was like, and I did it. And I was like, wow, like this was perfect. And every song was perfect and they were very happy. But it's kind of cool because I didn't even know I was getting surprised on what I was playing. I was like, I didn't know it was going to drop like this or do this. But it's hard because you're playing for, I was the first person to go. So you're playing for an empty room that's going to eventually turn into 2,000 plus people. And so you're going from nothing to like building it up to like the first 2 hours. So like by the time I was off, it might have been maybe half full. So it's,
and they still have to go even crazier after you. So you,
yeah, so I'm trying to keep it not crazy, but I'm trying to give, I want to play what I want to play, but the first hour is like you're trying to keep it like the music, the taste very good to impress obviously all the people that are working there and running the show, but also like just like stay on there. They're very specific with like what they like to play. Like it's a lot of melodic tech, and you don't want to go too harsh, but like you want it to be really good. So
I feel like if anything, like you said, it's like that's the time that the employees and the executives and the people that like run the venue are really paying attention because they're not busy. The bartenders are not like swarmed, you know, the ushers, everyone's just like kind of sitting around like waiting for people to come. Yeah. So they're focused on the music and listening and like, you know, they're able to like, you know, give it a real listen and like, you know, you can get good feedback and get on their good side.
Yeah. I think the opening sets are the most difficult things ever because I never know. It's so hard for me to play stuff that's like not what you want to play. Like I want to give like everything I have, but like it's, you have to be like more patient and that's where I struggle the most. I wouldn't say I struggle the most, but that's just like, I think it's every DJ's like hardest thing is like when you're playing the opening set, it's like you have to like, you can't go too hard, but you have to be make it good. So you have to get like really creative with what you play and you have to build it. You're basically, you're building the whole night, which is kind of cool. And I love also doing like a lot of my stuff. I like to just do it myself. Like I like to have no openers, and no other DJs because one, a lot of my people like to come because they want to see me play. And as soon as I get off, they leave and we miss out on revenue. And obviously that affects me because I all my shows, I get a revenue split. So I'm like, all right, I want to stay on the stage as long as possible because my people are going to stay longer. And as soon as I get off, they're going to leave. So sometimes I like to just do the whole night from like start to end. And it's cool because you can just really build it into what you want it to be. And it was funny because last week I did a show and I had a friend open for me and I got on and I didn't, it felt so weird. Like I didn't like hopping on. I liked building that from like the small amount of people to like it filling the entire venue. I liked having that gradual like build up and getting it to a point where you finally like break through and like everyone like goes from like kind of just like bobbing around to like really into it.
What's the longest time you've like consecutively been spinning for?
Oh my God. I mean, we've done boats for like,
yeah, it's gotta be,
we've
done
boats for like 10 hours. And there's been a time where I haven't peed once. Haven't peed, no phone. We just went like 10 hours on my friend's Mo's boat. And we've had like 100 people on his boat and it's been insane. And a part of it is because I don't want to leave the decks because I don't want anyone else to hop on. I don't want to lose my like shot. So I hate leaving because I always am like, oh, if I leave now, like someone else is going to take it. And then my turn's over and I never will ask someone to be like, can I hop on? I hate that. I hate when people ask that, or some people will ask all the time, like, can I get on? And I would never, while someone else is like in their set, I would never go up to someone and be like, hey, like, let me plug in. I would never like disrespect someone and do that. It's one thing to like say like, hey, like if you need like to go to the bathroom or you need some relief, or if you want, like I'm here. It's like one thing to let someone know, but there are people that are just like, let me get on.
It's so Miami. And I'm like, everyone's got their fucking USB.
And yeah. It's, I would never do that to someone else ever. Like I would, it's super cheesy and it's, I don't know. It's uncomfortable. Like so, if you're there playing, like you can go. If you want me to play, ask me. Like you can be like, hey, I need some help. Like get on.
So like what goes into the preparation for the different types of shows? Cause I mean, you have, you know, times that you're the openers, like you were saying at Ultra, but then, you know, you have the nights where you're the man at Fable and it's like, you're running the show. It's your night. But then sometimes you're just out on a boat for 10 hours with your friends. Like how do you go into each show with like a certain mindset to prepare for it?
I really don't prep. It's more just like a weekly thing. Like I consistently just.
So walk us through that then. Okay, walk us through like, your weekly routine.
It's like Thursday through Sunday, it's like a full bender. I sleep like 2-3 hours a night, especially Friday and Saturday night. Like there's nights where we'll go all night. I need like 2 hours of sleep and I'm good. I have friends that don't, I literally have friends that have full-time jobs that Thursday night will go out. They'll stay up the entire night, go to work from being out. One friend in particular, he's savage. He'll go out, go to the office, leave. He'll call me and be like, all right, I'm ready to go back out again. He's like, where are you playing tonight? And then we'll go out. And he literally has so much heart. He doesn't quit. I love it. I need like at least 2-3 hours of sleep. And usually it's like Friday, I play somewhere Saturday, like we throw like a sick boat party.
At least 2 hours of sleep.
For me, like if I wake up after, if I wake up statement. After 2-3 hours, like I wake up and I feel fine. On the weekends, like my body just like knows and it's fine. It's not like I'm not sitting there like struggling to like keep my eyes open. Like I'm excited for it. And then Mondays I just like sleep the whole day. That's like my day. I catch up. And then throughout the entire week, my preparation is basically making new stuff, making like new remixes, making just finding new unreleased stuff from other DJs from like, or like SoundCloud. You want to find stuff that's not released or Shazamable. That's what's going to make people like want to come out to your sets because they can't find the music on Spotify. The thing I hate the most is when like DJs or bigger DJs will send me their music and it's such a good song and I love playing it and no one else has it. And then they release the song and I'm like, no, like... Now everyone can get it. That's the worst. But obviously that's going to happen. You got to just keep on getting more unreleased stuff. And that's what I've been trying to do. So now going forward is like, I think the, well, back it up a little bit. The best thing about my career is, I think, getting denied a lot. A lot of this stuff is very political. This like industry is very political on like who plays where and what, like who opens for who. It doesn't matter necessarily. Like a lot of people, they don't care. Like, oh, they should care about the openers, like selling tickets and pushing people to come to the venue. Like I know that in Miami, I know that there's not that many people that can bring the amount of people that I bring out. And it's not just like bringing out like people. It's like the people that come out, it's like a community. Like everyone's friends with everyone almost. It's like the same group of like 200. And then there's always like the 50% new people that like those people bring their people. And it's like 50% of the people are always the same and they all know each other. And then it's the new people that come as well. And that's when it grows. But the best thing is like getting denied has made me be like, all right, I'm just going to throw my own shows. And I think that's the best thing ever. Then it's so much more powerful than opening for someone big, because growing my own audience with whether it's me throwing it or it's my event company called Lionheart throwing it, which I have a partner with on. It's building something that's like a real tangible asset. And it's like actually something that you can like,
it's the value.
The value. Providing. Like I have, I have 5,000 phone numbers and contacts in Miami from that. That's how many people have, it's like around 5,000 people that have been to a Benjamin Lloyd show. And I can now, I can target those people so easily with a text and email. And that's like, that's what means the most. Like now I can send out a link and the first hour get 200 RSVPs for it, which is the most powerful thing. And it makes it better to go to other, these other venues and say, hey, I can bring this many people there. I'll do a 4 days of promotion. I'll promise you a top like five best revenue night. And I'll give you a, whatever, $3,000 to $5,000 deposit to guarantee it that you guys can hold. And I've never not hit it. So I think like getting denied from like all these bigger shows and
you'll
getting, like,
front your money to just to guarantee it.
Yeah. Because
does anyone else do that?
I don't know anyone that does it like that.
Is that something you learned? Because in the last episode we did with you, you said you got your start like in music by like going to all the, you know, like the Justin Bieber type shows and handing out your cards and saying that you were gonna throw your own show and you'd rent out a venue and you'd sell tickets.
Yeah.
Is this kind of that on like a much higher scale?
Yeah, basically. I mean, if you want to get money out of doing it, you need to get a revenue split of the bar. Most places aren't going to give you that unless you're going to guarantee them that their numbers that are better than their normal numbers. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to bring you an $10,000 extra revenue. If you're making $10,000 extra, then I want like at least five of that. And you're still going to be making 5,000 more. And then I'm going to get at least five. I'm hoping I can get like 10. But
no, it's been cool. Like seeing you build that cult following, because yeah, like every time you have a night out, it's like your night, you yeah know, the next day you're reposting like 20 different stories of yeah different people having different angles of you. And number one, it's always the same girls that are, you know, like yeah posting it. And then like also like, they're all so welcoming. Like you said, they're all such good friends, because we went down in December, yeah, met a bunch of people, you know, very briefly at Fable yeah and then on the boat. And then I went down a month later, like with my girlfriend, and so yeah many of your friends like came up to me
yeah
and was like, hey, good to see you again. Like, yeah, they're, you know, good. No, that was just really cool that you have like yeah that group behind you and that, you know, that no matter what you're doing, like you're going to have people show up.
Yeah. No, they're, without them, I'm literally nothing. And I always say it like I can't do any of it without my friends and our greater friend group as well. Like nothing would be possible.
The spicy rigatoni nights probably have something to do with that, right?
What was that?
The pasta nights probably oh, play a big role yeah in that.
I let my friend Chelsea take over the pasta nights now.
Yeah.
Yeah, she likes to do it. So yeah, we it's, yeah, it's good. It's just like, it's just a really good community down there, and everyone down there, it's different than up here. It's just like the culture is like, it's like, imagine everyone of your friends living in Seaport. Instead of living in the entire city of Boston, like everyone here would just live in Seaport. And if you wanted to go hang out with them, you could text them and be like, everyone just walk over to the park or walk over to this bar. And we're all going to like get drinks there, Taco Tuesday, or we're going to have a dinner party at mine and like we're going to pregame. It's just so easy, so convenient. And then imagine it being summer year round. And it's like when it's summer here, you're like, oh, it's, I mean, if there was a happy hour here, you would be like, oh, let's go down. Let's go like do this. Or you can go walk the boardwalk down here. Like we have that year round there. So it's, everyone always wants to be outside and doing stuff.
So you're just saying that Boston, like, that Miami's just seaport, but better and year round.
Just like young, like everyone's young, fit, hungry to like, they just want to like, everyone wants to be around each other and everyone wants to hang out. And whether it's partying, going on a boat, doing like there's, we play volleyball every Wednesdays. We have like a big crew. I take the boat out snorkeling. Like I try to go once every other month to like do that. We get a big crew and we go snorkeling like down the Keys on the boat. Like we do, like there's so much to do down there. And yeah, just, it's just different
than on the business side. You've never had a manager, right?
No.
Do you ever plan to get one?
Yeah, but I want it to be like, a lot of times people are like, oh, I want to introduce you to somebody that manages people, but I don't want to be introduced to somebody. I want them to find me, and I want it to be somebody that like wants to be involved with me. And I'm not going to have that until I feel like somebody, like I want someone to believe in me, and I don't want someone to just be like connected to me and be like, hey, like, you should work with this person and like try to get like bookings out of it. I want the person to be like, one, my friend, two, somebody that really believes in like the big vision.
And they have to be able to bring something to the table too. Like in addition to what you're talking about and the business strategies and stuff. Like, is there a certain, it's hard to like measure it, right? But is there a certain like size or like point that you know that, okay, you know, when I'm playing these venues or getting these type of checks, like I really need to bring someone in to take it to the next level?
Yeah, I think one of the most difficult things right now is representing myself. Like when I go to like a bigger venue and I'm like, hey, like I'm this, it's hard to hype up yourself. You need like someone to hype you up for you. So to like say like, hey, this is what I can do. I want to do a show here. They're most likely going to be like, if I went to like the Space venue, like if you went to like Space, they own like Space, Floyd, Jolene. It's hard to be like, hey, this is what I can do. And I do have all my revenue numbers like in Excel spreadsheets, and I can be like, this is it. Like no one else is, there was no other promoters, there was no other DJs, like everything was done by me. It's still like hard for them to be like, oh, they're like, oh, whatever. Until you do it, and then they're like, oh, like we want you back, or we want to do a monthly contract with you, until you get that opportunity. But until then, it's tough to like break through when you're representing yourself. So there is a point where you need it, and there's a point where hopefully I'm too busy to like to be able to like talk to certain people, but it's just a little, it's not backwards, but it's just like a little weird to represent yourself business wise like to negotiate as well. It sounds worse if I'm trying to negotiate higher numbers for myself when somebody else is gonna be like, no, like this is what he needs and blah blah blah. You don't want to sound like the bad guy. You always want to sound like the good guy.
You
want to
be innocent, kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, like, you want someone else to do that work for you. Of course. And that's just like natural. And
but you do you like doing the business?
I like doing it because I like to be in charge of like everything that happens, and I don't really trust anybody to do it for me. Like if I need to answer an email, I want to be able to do it like right away. I don't want to text someone and be like, hey, did you get that email? They just said they sent it. Like, can you answer that right now? So yeah, that's kind of how it is.
Yeah, I feel like the music industry and like agencies in general are just like, it seems like, I don't know, some people are against it, some people are in favor of it. And like, you know, if you're crafty, like you are, like, you know, kind of like not bending the rules, but like going around like norms and like fronting your own money, which is like something that agencies would like not do. Like most people, most people are not going to do that, obviously. And like guaranteeing that like you can sell, and like you just like have that like the belief in yourself, like it's, you know, it's impressive like to be on that level.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, I'm very smart about it. I'm not doing it for the money. I do it because I want to bring together a good event. And I think the best thing that I sell is I sell FOMO. Like, you need to sell FOMO. You need to give people the feeling that if they don't go, then they're missing out on that night. And I think I do a good job of building that FOMO where it's like, this is the event to go to, especially like when it's in Miami. And New York, I do a good job of it too. Like when I played at, the last time I played in New York, it was a really good venue. It was called Ketchishubi. I got a text the next day and they're like, that was our best night of revenue we've ever had, which is good. And I have a good New York following. Like I can bring out a lot of people there as well. But it's like, that's the most rewarding thing is like when it's not just in Miami, when I'm like, oh, I can do this in another city. That's when I'm like, okay, this is
really, I think the FOMO too in New York is bigger than anything too, because it's like people don't know when you're going to be back, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's only up here once every couple of months.
Yeah.
We have to go. And then for the validation to hit the next morning, like, that's crazy. Like, do you know, like off the top of your head, what is the biggest like revenue you've brought to like a venue? Or like the even biggest like increase like you've brought?
Yeah. I personally know. I'm not gonna say, but I know that I know that like on like certain nights a place will do X numbers, and I know that like when I'm there the revenue is like doubled or even more than doubled. Which is like from their average nights, which is really good. But it's not just me. Like there's I have help. I have my friends. I have a partner, on Lionheart, who really helps me a lot. And going forward, like the real goal is with Lionheart is, well, first off, Lionheart is like, it's what we throw like the events under. It's like this, I have a really big vision for like what I want it to be. It's like, I want it to be like a record label. I want it to be like a festival. But going forward, it's like, we want to bring on bigger acts, and then I'll open for them and I'll be involved in the show. But we have bigger, like much bigger acts on the show. And then like, I kind of want it to be like my baby, where it's like, we really just grow this to be something really big and do these like big festivals. I was really inspired by, I went to John Summit in Tennessee, in the caverns. I don't know if you ever heard of that before. Have you guys heard
Looks
of the
caverns?
It looks cool.
I've never been to, it's like, oh, like, I don't know if you know what like Wook music is. It's called like, the person is a Wook and like the music is called Wubs. It's like all like kind of drum and bass type of music. And it's like very like earthy people, and everyone it goes camping there. I've never experienced something like that before. And it was like, it's like a camping festival. It was the whole weekend. And there's like no VIP tables there, which is cool. Cause in Miami, like a lot of these places have like, it's like kind of like, there's a lot of status and stuff like that there. There's just like, there's a VIP section, but no one really goes there, but there's no like bottle service. And it's just like, everyone there is so nice and the culture is so crazy. And you just feel like so safe there. Sometimes in Miami, like at certain spots, you feel a little like unsafe, especially if you're intoxicated or if, like other things. So you don't have to worry. Like you don't feel like you're ever going to get pickpocketed. You don't feel like you're ever going to like step on the wrong person's like foot, or like if like a random girl talks to you, if you're going to get punched in the face by a random like ex-boyfriend at this place, you felt so safe. And you're in the woods in the middle of Tennessee, like 2 hours from Nashville. So that was a really cool experience that like really opened my eyes, and I was like, wow, like I want to do something like this. This is sick.
Was that run by experts only?
It was experts only. Yeah. So like that's the goal. And that's why I'm so pumped that when certain venues don't allow me to play and I just keep on building my own thing, it's like, okay, well, I'm building towards something better than just being able to open for big people. It's like, I'd much rather build something now. It's kind of like, a lot of people go backwards. They like do these big festival shows and they try to start their own stuff, but it's actually better to build your own thing now from scratch and then just have this like powerful fan base that can help you grow to these like much bigger festivals and actually have real ticket sale pull to everywhere you go. Cause I don't want to show up anywhere and not have, any pull. I don't want to show up there like empty handed. Like that's the worst.
No one knows who you are.
Yeah, I don't. I never want to do that. That's the worst thing, and I would feel guilty taking a paycheck to just like show up somewhere and not bring any like extra revenue to a place or bring something to the table besides just playing music.
How would like a bigger name, like let's just say John Summit, for example, if you, you know, one day, you know, soon you are able to achieve a Lionheart festival and you go to him and you say, hey, like I'm doing this thing. I've been growing this business. Yeah. I want to open for you. Is he going to, if you cut him a check, is he going to say yeah? Or is he going to kind of feel disrespected that some, you know, kid from Miami is just trying to, you know, like maybe leech onto his success?
No, I don't think I would just be like, no, I don't think it would. It would just be the way you approach it. I don't think he would feel it would be like a disrespect thing. I think like it's more so like the show is booking him, and then we're picking the other lineups, the other DJs. I'm like I'm an owner in it, so obviously I'm gonna have myself play on the lineup. It wouldn't be like presented like in a bad way, but also he's probably like he's not someone that like. That's like, I'm more like looking like on a different vibe of like more melodic music and melodic house and melodic tech. Obviously, I would love to play with him. I feel like I was supposed to open for him during Music Week, but it got rained out. I had a show at Surf Comer. It was with Nicole Madaber, and then he got announced as a surprise guest. And then I don't know if you saw online, like they were crazy. It was like monsooning in Miami.
Yeah, it was nuts.
And I was at the venue, and like Deadmau5 was on the show. There was a lot of good people. Layton was on the show.
Wasn't there someone else you were supposed to open to in Colorado?
What did you say?
In Colorado, you were supposed to open for someone.
I did. I opened for MK at Surf Lodge. I mean, at Snow Lodge.
Yeah.
But that happened.
That's cool.
Wasn't there somebody else that you were, weren't you supposed to open for Diplo in Aspen or something?
Oh, that was another Snow Lodge thing. I was just like picking out like which show I wanted to do when I was there or which weekend I wanted to do. And I ended up picking MK just because it lined up with when my friends wanted to go to Aspen and we kind of made it a trip.
How was that?
That was sick because it was all like, it was opera and like everyone's in like their opera outfits. And I love when girls dress like that. Yeah, it's super cool. And I played 3 shows there in that weekend. So basically turned my normally expensive vacation to like a paid trip. And it was sick. I played at this place called Gala. And that was one of the best, like one of my favorite nights. The place is like small, intimate. Maybe it fits 180 people or something like that in there. Maybe like 200. But the sound system is insane. The production is insane. And it's like, you're in like a ski town and everyone, it was just like so much fun. And I was like on stage with, there was probably like 15 of us friends and extended friends. And we had the whole stage and we were just like, it's basically like, we're going out to like, we're going to go out and party anyways. But like now I'm in control of the night and all my friends get to drink for free on stage with me. And it's like, there's nothing better than that. So that was a great weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. Aspen is like pretty sick.
Aspen is great. Did you guys ski out there? Or Jack, did you go there?
I've never been to Aspen. I've been to Breckenridge and like Vail, but that's it.
Okay.
I didn't get any ski days in this year.
No?
But no.
I went to Utah this year. I didn't get out to I was in Colorado for like 10 days last year, but didn't ski as much as I wanted to.
I extended my Aspen trip. I think I changed my flight 3 times. It just was so good. And with the Icon Pass, it's like...
no reason not to.
It's just like, I kept on extending. It's especially during the week, I just like kept on hitting up my Airbnb guy. And I was like, I'll give you $500 for like one more night. And like normally it's like $1,500 a night, but it's midweek, so no one's there. Oh, and he's like,
sure, that's I'll the best. That's the only time I go ski. It's midweek. I don't go weekends. I can't do weekends. It sucks.
Because of the lines?
Yeah, the lines. I just have to be out there by myself.
There's like, no lines in Aspen.
Even on weekends?
There's 4 mountains out there.
Oh, yeah. It's just huge.
And it's a 4-hour drive from Denver. So it's too hard to just do a day trip.
It's expensive.
It's too expensive to do a day trip. And it's like too expensive for just like most people to just like go out there. They're just going to go to like Breck or Vail. It's like 2 hours, yeah. Or there's Keystone. So it doesn't really it's pretty hard to just do a day trip out there. And it's like to fly in there, you have to fly to Denver or, and then to Aspen, or you need to Chicago, LA, Vegas, and Texas have like direct flights, but most cities do not have a direct flight.
Will you just get a PJ?
Hopefully one day. Yeah.
What's it been like coming back to Boston and like, you know, bringing, your Miami vibes, the music and everything back up here? You've done it a couple of times. Obviously you're sitting here tomorrow night. You got a pretty big show coming up. Talk about just, you know, coming back home.
Super pumped to come back here. I'm playing at Cavo tomorrow. I think it's Boston's best club by far. They did an amazing job decorating it. It looks so nice. It's like, it feels like you're inside of a cave. Have you guys both been there?
Yeah.
I haven't been
there. You haven't been there yet? Okay. It's insane. Like they did an amazing job. There's like these four skylights and the skylights have LED screens inside of them. The disco ball in the middle is like probably a 4 foot disco ball in diameter. And then like the stage is up high and there's like a really cool like cave looking like LED behind you. And it's like and that sound system is amazing. I think it's Void sound system. It's like one of the only ones in like North America, or I think it might be the only style like in North America.
It's like a European.
The sound is so amazing in there. Huh. And the production is awesome. And it's just like so fun to play there. And it's fun like when I come home, cause like obviously all my friends will come out. My family's going to come out tomorrow. My mom actually got a table for tomorrow. They're not like, my family's like not like big drinkers or anything, but they wanted to have like their own little section. So she's like, all right, I'll get like a $500 minimum table, which is great. So they're going to be like, they have a stage table next to my friends and they have another table.
That's awesome.
So they'll all be there. And it's so funny. My mom's texting in like every family group chat and every friend group chat and like selling more tickets than I am, which is funny. But it is really nice to come back, especially in like when the weather's nice like this, into to play there. And I'm super pumped that you guys are going to be filming the live set. So we're going to have some sick footage. And yeah, no, these cameras are going to be unbelievable.
It's going to be pretty cool.
It's going to be sick. Yeah. And I think it's going to be really packed tomorrow.
What's the capacity there? Do you know?
I don't know. Probably like you can probably fit like 800 people in there. It's pretty big.
It's bigger than Mariel, right?
Oh, it's like double the size of Mariel. Oh, wow. I feel like Mariel's like 300 people. It's probably like at least 8. Like you could definitely fit that many people in there. I don't know like what comfortably you can do. But
did it used to be like a subway station or something?
I don't know.
I don't know what used to be there. It just kind of like popped up.
I know like apparently like one of them was like a long time ago used to be like a subway.
Well, the Mariel used to be the post office, right?
That's
right over the bridge too. So probably.
Well, it's in Post Office Square.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right there.
So it's in like one of the oldest buildings in, or it's the
oldest post office. The restaurant and then downstairs. Yeah. Something like that.
No, it's sick. They did a really good job with that. So I'm pumped for that. And then New York on Saturday will be really good. New York Saturday, Sunday will be really good. And a bunch of my friends flew up from Miami to have a weekend in New York. And they're all coming on Sunday.
So you got three shows?
Three shows.
Back to back to back.
And I just got asked to do a yacht Monday night, 10 to 1 a.m.
In Miami or in New York?
In Miami.
Are you going to fly down and do it?
I'm already flying back. I'll be back at 6 o'clock. So I think it, and that's like a real show. Not just like our friends going on a yacht and like playing. So I don't know about that yet. We got to see. I'm waiting for the email response back. But that would be fun. That'd be like a real long weekend. That'd be a good weekend.
That's a bender.
Yeah.
What's been your favorite venue you've played so far? Maybe excluding Fable. I don't know if that would be your favorite. But let's just exclude that for this purpose.
My favorite venue so far is M2, just because the Lasers. I love Lasers, and the production there is just like... is just insane. The booth monitors they have there are so nice. The thing is, when you play at these really big venues, they have these insane booth monitors and subs next to you. And when you're in between, they have them on each side, left and right of you. And when you're in between them and they have really good ones, it's like, it's almost like being on a drug. Like the music is so good. It's so powerful. And when you're in between it, it feels so good in your body. At least to me, it just like takes over your body and it's the coolest thing ever. And it makes mixing so much fun.
Cause you can feel it.
You can feel it. Like, yeah. It's just like, yeah, you're just in between these massive, like you can just feel the frequencies of everything. The low end feels so good. Everything is so crisp. It's like being on a drug. It's like the music takes over and it's so cool. So that's my favorite venue. And, there's, some other cool stuff I have in the works.
You want to share anything on here or are you keeping it private?
I'm like, I love, there's this music, there's this festival called We Belong Here. I did their festival back in February and hopefully we're going to be working a lot together this coming year. I love the owner. They're all great people. They put on really cool shows and really cool spots. They try to pick like really unique venues, rooftops, parks, and they put on really big like shows. Like I'm assuming in the Miami one was at least 5,000 tickets, I'd say. I can't give an exact number, but I'd say it's probably at least 5,000. That was my first festival that I was a part of. And their like sound is really good. So like, when you get to these bigger levels, it's just like the production makes a big difference in how you can really control the crowd. If the production's not that good, it's hard to take over the crowd as much because you really need that good sound system and the good lighting to really do that.
You dropped like 2 weeks ago, basically mm-hmm. almost exactly like tomorrow, right? 2 weeks yep. ago from tomorrow, your first original track.
Yep.
We've what? Had that on repeat, by the way. Yeah, it's literally been that and Morgan Wallen and Post Malone.
Yeah, like we've back just been and back, bumping, and bumping all those. Talk about the process of that and like, you know, what went into that first one, but then also what's to come and the original process and actually producing your own music.
Yeah, so it wasn't until about a year ago where I had like my first real show at like a real venue. It was this place called Treehouse. It's now shut down in Miami. I'm so sad it shut down because it's like...
It shut down?
Yeah. Have you been there before?
Yeah. Not with you, but I've been there
so
before.
So Treehouse is... So they recently like redid their sound system and like their lighting and everything. And then... And I've only seen it with the new stuff. And that sound system was insane. Like the laser in there was amazing. It was a perfect size room where it's easy to pack it out.
It's small, it feels like.
Yeah, there's two different rooms. There's okay. a bigger room and a small room. And then there's an outside. So it's like, there's three actually. And it was really cool. And that was my first real show was playing there. And that was last May. Or maybe it was June. Yeah. And that was like my first real one. And then I started like last summer, I started getting into producing my own stuff. And I put out the Akon Right Now remix.
That's been popping.
Talk yeah. about that. Like you went super ultra mega viral on that. And then like, not even like necessarily just your stuff, yeah. but people put
was it
that
Australian dude like yeah. playing that like on yeah, TikTok?
This DJ, his name's DJ Levi, I think that's yeah. how you say it. Yeah, DJ Levi. And he played it and like all of his stuff blows up. It was one of his biggest videos he posted ever, actually. I think I think it has like 15 million views on his Instagram, and his TikTok has another 15 million as well, which is sick because that I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs to play. And I like never really cared. I never really did anything with it. I just put it on SoundCloud and I love the song. And a lot of people would download it. Probably had like 800 downloads before him posting it. And then he posted that. And then it really got downloaded. Like a lot of DJs. Everyone on SoundCloud can download it. So the only people that are downloading it are DJs. So now it's like doubled in like the last couple weeks. And it's starting to get played like everywhere. I'll get a DM like once a day being like, hey, I'm in like South Africa and somebody just played this song and like I loved it and it's yours. And I'm like, that's so cool. And it's like all over the world. People always send me that, which is pretty cool.
Have you been able to get in touch with Akon about dropping that or?
No, like somebody like reached out to me about it and was like, hey, his, like you could release it. And they asked for $20,000 like directly to his management. I don't think it was a scam. Like it wasn't some random person, like somebody connected me to them and they were like, yeah, you could release it for like a fee. I would never do that.
And you would own it or they would still own it?
I don't know exactly like what the, like who would own, like, he would own the master probably and everything, but like it's, I don't know exactly like how it would work. I never done that. So I don't know like how that works when people remix songs and get it released on Spotify, like who's taking the royalties and what percent they're getting from it. But I was just like, oh, I'll just let it keep on just going, doing its thing on SoundCloud and let it go there. But that was like pretty cool to see. And now when I play that song, the last couple of weeks, it's been like, it's been insane. We did this, me and my couple friends threw this insane boat party. I don't know if you guys saw it maybe 3 weeks ago. Okay. So we had this one yacht. It's a 120-foot yacht. We had 120 people just on that boat alone. We had our friend tie up with another 50 and then we had another friend tie up with another 20. And I rented full production, insane sound system, like all the best CDJs, everything. Normally on a boat, like we'll bring like a smaller controller. It's easier, more portable, and like not crazy speakers. But for this, I was like, no, we're going to do it right. And then it ended up being this 12 boat tie up. And it was probably like, it had to be at least 300 people. And I actually think it was the most legendary like Miami tie up ever. It was insane this day. And I'll show you guys the videos after of like how long. And it was like every boat was a gigantic yacht. And it just like everyone gets more boats because I'm pulling up and pulling up. And turned to this cool thing. And I was trying to get, it was so hot out. So it was hot. And like the boat was kind of hot where like the speakers were set up. And I was trying to get everyone like all dancing together and like all like it packed. And I was like trying to figure it out. And my friend's like, Akon, play it. And I played it and like instantly within like 30 seconds, like you just felt like everyone come together. And it was like right when the sun was setting. And it just probably turned from like 100 people to like 200 people smushed on the back of a boat, packed. And everyone after like that song played, like, it was just like the next hour was just insane. And it was like one of the coolest things we ever threw. And we threw it in like a week. Every guy had to pay like $450 to get on the boat. There was like 40 guys and
definitely worth it though.
40 guys, 80 girls on our boat. And
it's awesome.
And then the other boats, I don't know what they had, but it was like, yeah, it was crazy.
I've been trying to figure out how to ask this question. And like, I was going to originally ask you, like, do you ever get imposter syndrome? But like, you know, I've been listening to you talk for the last 3 minutes and you clearly don't. So like, what advice do you have to people who have like, you know, found success like so quickly in something? Like you said that you only really started DJing because your buddy went to the bathroom like a year ago and you just started fucking around on his board.
It's good memory,
dude. We watched the last episode to refresh it. But so like, you know, you've blown up over this last year. You have a SoundCloud remix that, you know, literally has tens of millions of views. You've had 5,000 people come out to see you. Like you're doing everything that you wanted to do. So like, what advice do you have for somebody who might have that, you know, very quick success, but, you know, they're kind of having trouble coming to terms with it because you seem to be, you know, taking it in stride, but a lot of people can't do that.
I mean, I guess the best advice would just be, you just got to be genuine throughout it and like, and enjoy the ride. Like the ride is the coolest part. And especially when you can feel the ride, like right now it's like this last month I've like really been like enjoying, like just feeling like everything happen. And like, it's like, so the Akon remix happened. Then I had my show at Fable and I was like, it was like, it reminded me of like when I was like a little kid and like, I used to be like a little pop star. This like kid came up to us. He was my age. He's like, can you take a photo with my parents? And the mom knew everything about me. And I was like, oh my God. She's like, I've been to this, and this show. Like, I think you're the best, like next thing. And like, they like genuinely like wanted to take a, like a photo with me, and like she was so excited. And this kid's like, art, like imagine like going up to a kid and be like, can you take a photo with my parents? I would be like, mom, what are you doing? You know what I mean? But like, I feel like it's, and he, the kid was normal, like normal kid. So I was like, wow, it takes a lot for someone to ask that. And it felt so good. And then you just like, see it, that happen, like, and it slowly just happens. And then I'll like go out to eat, and then like all the waitresses or like waiters will be like, will start to like recognize you. And then you just kind of feel it happening and just do more and more. And then it's just like the momentum and the ride is like the best thing. So I guess the best advice is just enjoy the ride and be present during it, and just be a genuine, like, good people. Just be good to people. It's not hard to be a nice person, I guess. Like, take care of everybody, especially in the service industry. If you're in it, then take care of everyone. But also just like, don't be afraid to ask for advice. That's like the most important thing. Yeah. And you just learn, like learn as you go. That's the coolest part.
Go ahead.
Other people, like artists that you've, like, you know, you talk about earlier, you were talking about like the space and the genre that you're in with like the kind of Afro house and like the melodic tech, like that kind of stuff. Are there artists that you've either built a relationship with, like personally, in that space, or just like admired and watched from afar that you've learned
from? I have some people that I really, really like, and I really want to get them on shows, and they're not like super big yet, but I know they're going to be really big. I love this guy, Genesee. He makes most of his music is on like Medusa's label. He makes a lot of music with Medusa, and I love his sound. I talk to him. He sends me some of his unreleased stuff, and I really want to get like him on a show. And then there's a couple other guys that I really like, that I just like, that I talk to. And that's the best part, is like now I'm starting to like make relationships with other big, like, bigger DJs, and I can, and like, I want to be able to like book them. I think that's where the power is. If I can like get them, if I can book them on certain stuff, and then like open for them or do something with them and like build a real organic relationship with them, that's like a real key to success. Cause you got to be friends with everybody in the industry, but I want to like do it with like, obviously my favorite people.
Is it tough to be friends with people, like friends with everybody in the, is it tough to be friends with everybody in the industry? Because like a lot of times, you know, only so many people can be DJing every single night in Miami. So are there people that like you kind of feel competitive with, you're trying to beat them out for a booking, or for the most part, are you able just to kind of skate your own lane?
No, I kind of, I have like my friends that are DJs, and we kind of do our own like stuff separately. And like sometimes we'll do stuff together and collaborate on certain stuff, which is good because you learn a lot, especially like producing wise. Like I have friends, even if you just sit down for like 30 minutes with somebody else and you see them, if you let them sit in the chair on Ableton, and you just like see like different shortcuts that they're using, and I'm like, oh, like what did you press to just like to do that? And it's like, oh, you just press like command this, and you're like, oh, I didn't even know you could do that. And you just learn so much. So it's important to have that and like work together with other people. Competitive wise is, I think there's like healthy competition. I don't necessarily feel competition because I throw a lot of my own stuff.
Do you think people feel like that you're a threat to them because you throw your own stuff?
Maybe. I don't not in a bad way, but like there's probably people that are like, I don't know, maybe it's Miami's like big but it's small, so I feel like if we throw events on the same night, it's going to be hard to, like, we have like a lot of the same friend groups, so it's hard to like compete with each other. So like if I'm throwing like a big event, and whatever event is like the established event that like we're all going to, yeah, it might be like competing, and it might be hard to throw another event on the same night that we're doing, that I'm doing an event. So maybe, yeah. So maybe in that case, but like, no, the only thing that I get annoyed about is when there's like dumb openers for like big people, and I'm like, why is that person opening? Like, they're not bringing anyone out.
No political, one, like no you were
one,
saying.
Yeah, no one cares. Yeah. And it's whatever. It just made me want to throw my own stuff. So in the long run, like, I'm thankful that stuff happened, because it's better.
What's the summer look like for you in terms of new releases, shows, everything?
I want to release, I want to do like at least like a original song like once a month. I build up like a catalog of like, we call them IDs, like unreleased like music, of like whether it's like a remix of something, and you just kind of like don't release them and just hold on to them, and it makes your sets unique. So I build up a lot of those. I make a lot of those weekly, which is fun. And then I'm really excited for, I'm playing Live, June 22nd. I'm opening for Dombrowski, which I love him. He's so good. And Live is like,
that might be our, that might be our 24 hour Miami trip.
Live is the place to play down there. So, and then the next day I'm headlining, Asia Day Party in New York, which is going to be sick. And it's with my buddy, Luke Alexander, throws a show, and he's been crushing it this year. He like that kid crushes it. Like I learn a lot from what he does, and I have a lot of respect for him.
You just did Kevo.
Yeah. I have a lot of respect for Luke. He's probably like the smallest DJ, like on like books wise, that sells like the most in the entire industry. This kid throws the biggest like New Year's parties, like his summer day parties, like all of it sells out. And he like business wise, like very smart. So like he's making more money than like the top, like some of like the big DJs, like by throwing these parties, like, and that is like, that is very important. He's built something that's like a tangible asset that like, it's
similar where venues just know when they book Luke Alexander, they have a guarantee of people coming and spending money, and it's kind of like they know the crowd's going to be good and consistent, like the same every time.
I'd say more so like when he's like doing his own events,
yeah,
which is like the most important thing. It's like you're building something that's like, that's yours, you know what I mean?
And like, so what no you're doing,
that, no one can take that from him, and that's amazing. Like he's
betting on himself.
We're doing it Sunday. I'm doing the closing set. He's headlining, and the show has been sold out for like 2 weeks now. And last year the shows would sell out like day of, so he's like really taken to the new level. And it's like I texted him right before this, and I was like, any more tickets? Any way I can get just a couple people in? And he's like, no, we're like oversold out, like 900 people, which is pretty crazy on a Sunday. So
that's awesome.
And it's a Sunday. Yeah. It's a Sunday party. So I love that. That's sick. And not like no one else in this country is doing a party like that at his level. I mean, he's at a great level, but I'm saying like there's huge, massive like radio DJs that can't even sell that.
Yeah.
Do you think that's about him, like as a person? Do you think it's about his music? Do you think it's about his business sense? Like, how does somebody like capitalize on their current audience and be so successful for what they are?
It's a combination of all of that.
What's the most important thing?
Most important thing is literally the combination of all of it and building your own unique event or show that people want to go to, that you're selling that FOMO. It's like, you're not there, you missed out on the best view in New York City, the best sunset, great music, like the potential to meet your future girlfriend, whoever. Like you're selling that FOMO and that good time. And the difference is like, you want to throw a show where people, instead of being like, oh, I had fun tonight, it's like, that was the best night of my life. Like, that's what I love hearing. It's like when my friends are like, every night we always joke about it. We always are like, this is the best night of my life. And everyone else is like, you said that last week. And I'm like, yeah, but it gets better every time. And then like one of my friends always, she's like, this is the best night of my life. Like, I love it. And then it's just so funny because it just happens every week we say that. But like we mean it. It's like people leave there and say like, this was the best night of my life. And I love when my guy friends are like, I got a text the next morning, but like every time I come to your show, I get laid. So I said that last time, and like, it's like the best compliment. Like, I have a group of like a couple guys that are like, I'm at like a 90% fuck rate right now every time I come.
There's a lot of what the girls you're hanging out with too.
Yeah.
I feel like the thing with like you and you talk about Luke right now too is just like consistency too.
Yeah.
It's, you know, before you have the name, doing the things and building the habits and building just the, you know, the reps, like putting those in that, yeah, that like you're not doing like anything super different from like what you would be doing without the name or without the, yeah, status or without the presence. Mm-hmm. You just have a stage and people, you know, that are interested and more of a demand for it now.
Yeah.
And so like, it's kind of, when you operate like genuine and you operate like you're driven, you're hustling, you getting your nickel up,
yeah,
you're, you know, that, passionate about it, like you're gonna succeed.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What's like your end goal with DJing? Like, do you want to be selling out MSG? Do you want to be making a bajillion dollars, or do you just want to be throwing sick rooftop parties with like a small intimate group of friends?
Continue
hearing you're giving people the best night ever.
I want to bring people together, and like my whole thing is I don't care like who you are, what you look like, where you're from. I want people to be able to dance, have the best night of their life, and just bring good people together. And that's like the most rewarding and like fun thing is like when you can give people that night. And I don't really like the table stuff. I don't like the promoter stuff. I want everyone to be welcomed in. Obviously at some point I can't always do everything for free, like free events. Because hopefully the demand will be high enough where I can't do that. But I like being able to throw these events and do like free until 12:30 to get in, which is a pretty reasonable time to make it free until. And I want people to be able to have these space to dance and just like have the best time. And I aspire to do, like, I want to do these big festivals. And I was, like I said, I was so inspired by the Cavern show, the John Summit show. It's like, you just felt like so like at home there. And normally I think a lot of people would be, it's kind of like you're in the middle of nowhere in the woods. Like everyone's on drugs at these places, but I've never felt so cozy and welcomed being on drugs at these places. Like it's like the coolest thing. And the music is just like takes over your body. And it's like a beautiful thing. I don't know if you guys have ever been to like a rave before or one of these crazy festivals.
I've spent some time in Barcelona.
Yeah. It's at the clubs.
Yeah.
So it's different. Like a festival is much different. You gotta give a festival, like you gotta go to like Afterlife or something like that. It's much, I haven't been to like a hip hop festival before.
Honestly, no.
I went to, someone asked me the other day, like one of the best, like the best concert I've ever been to. And I told them, Astroworld, the Travis Scott festival, the like the crazy one that was, yeah, like in Houston.
Oh, you went?
Yeah,
he was trampling there. Kids. He's 6'4".
No.
I want to know how that was.
It was the best, like, really? Live, like hip hop performance I've ever seen.
What was the crowd like?
There were 100,000 people there.
What was it like? So like when I've had experience at like hip hop, big outdoor hip hop like festival shows, it's like not necessarily like the friendliest people. It's the dance music culture.
It's so different.
So welcoming. And yeah, it's like, do you need water? Like, people, yeah, water, yeah, yeah. Like, and people are like, do you need gum?
At Travis Scott, they're like, yeah, fucking.
Yeah. People are like,
they'll punch you or something. Yeah.
If
yeah.
you step on their shoes, like you feel like kind of like, okay, I can't piss somebody off. And like,
yeah,
like you can't, like when I was at like those type of shows, like you try to get through the crowd and people are pissed when you brush through them.
It's a lot more violent there.
Yeah.
That show was like, that show was fucking sick. But the electronic music and the house and like the deep house tech, like that crowd, it's just positive. It's good energy. And it's like, everybody's there for the same reason, have a good time, and they just want to have fun with their friends. Yeah. And that type of fun is different than like Travis Scott fun. And like, I think as you grow up, you probably get to, you know, age out of that a little bit. Yeah. But no, I mean, that show was incredible. Like, I think Travis is like an insanely good performer. Mm. He brought out Drake. The stage was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The production there was like, I mean, like, I guess like production wise, you think of like Tomorrowland is probably like the top of the line. But like in terms of like hip hop, like he had the most insane, just like it looked like a mountain with these screens and stuff like that.
Was that the one when people died at it?
Yeah.
Did you, when you were there, did you see?
Nothing.
You didn't know anything was happening?
I got like 20 feet from the stage.
Really?
I started out pretty far back. And then like there, like the mosh pits open up. Mm-hmm. And like, I would just kind of like go in the middle, like, and then I just go to the other side.
Yeah.
And I kept doing that and like just leapfrogging up to the stage. I get up to this, like close to there. And, like it was very packed, but like I was expecting that. Like I knew what I was getting myself into. And nothing like was alarming about it to me. Like around where I was, I left, I was fine. Like the show ended and I thought it was like normal ending, right? Mm-hmm. Which was good because if he had like abruptly ended it, we didn't know what was going on, so we would have been like, what the fuck? Like people would have been like angry and like starting riots or like something, right? So my dad was like watching the live stream. He called me, he was like, yo, that looked pretty cool. Like you had a good time. I was like, yeah, going back to the hotel, like everything's all good. So like I'm walking back to the hotel, like my dad called me, like he knew I was good, like nothing had like surfaced the news yet. And then someone's like, yo, people died in there. Like there was an ambulance like in there. And I was like, no, like there wasn't. Yeah. Like I literally laughed it off because I was like, that's not true. Get back to the hotel and I'm like up all night on Twitter and like Reddit, like looking, and like it didn't even feel real. Like my experience was different than like what actually happened.
How many people died?
I'm not even sure. I know it was a couple though.
Was that last summer? Or was that like 2 years
2021
ago?
2021 November.
It
was like 3 years ago. Two and a half years ago. It's crazy. But
was that after COVID? Was that during COVID?
It was like
the first COVID show.
A year and a half. Yeah, it was the first. It was Drake's first time playing in like 2 years, two and a half, 3 years in the U.S.
It was pretty fucking sick. Wow, that's like, that seems like it was like last year. That's insane. It's like 2024.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So awesome. All right. We'll wrap this up. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you,
Anything
guys.
Else you got? Anything else you got to say to the people?
No, just hopefully we can do this every 6 months and hopefully we can both continue to grow like the same rate we're at right now, which would be sick. I mean, you guys have some big videos I've been seeing online, which is awesome. The production is great, so hopefully we can do another 6 month recap soon.
You got your first residency here. Maybe not first, but that. You got a residency on like the Nicolette podcast.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. So. And then next time maybe we can do something like it's on a yacht.
Fuck yeah.
That'd be sick.
That would be sick.
We set up the podcast last time we were on a yacht with you. And we didn't use the equipment.
But we can do it outside upstairs.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. I'm excited for it tomorrow night. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
We'll get all this stuff up there and
yeah.
Have a good time. So
yeah.
Thanks, man.
Right, thanks, man.